This is your Day X World War III update. It's just been brought to my attention that Moscow Airport was hit by a swarm of drones and that all flights, commercial and otherwise, have been suspended out of that region for the time being. Now, right now, what's happening, according to the commander of the Akhmat forces near, what is it called, Kursk, the Ukrainians are getting ready to do another push for the Kursk nuclear power plant in the coming days ahead, okay? So what this means is that NATO is going to continue to straddle the line of nuclear failure despite numerous threats from Russia of imminent nuclear retaliation should this problem persist. This is the leader of the Chechen forces in Kursk region, indicating that in the not-so-distant future, Kiev or Ukraine is going to make another break for the Kursk nuclear power plant and attempt to use some sort of nuclear blackmail in an attempt to bring Russia to heel and bring them to the bargaining table. So all this stuff you're hearing about Scholz peace plan, and this is all smoke and mirrors. Okay, anytime they start talking about peace, understand that the precondition is and always has been that unless Russia is willing to remove all its troops from the country, Ukraine is not going to negotiate. So Zelensky can say, hey, we want Russia to come to the next peace talks, and Scholz can say the same. The Russians aren't going to buy it. At this point in time, one thing is certain. NATO and Russia are preparing to go to war with one another. Whether that morphs from conventional into unconventional is a subject of debate, but I want to bring something to your attention, okay? There's a lot of news to cover today, a lot of things you are not going to hear anywhere else, including some novel perspective for you that people will start talking about, you know, a few days after I release this video. NATO has to have one of two plans. One of those plans would be that they really genuinely don't think that the Russians are getting ready to, or that they're willing, I should say, to bring this to the brink of nuclear conflict. The other possibility is that NATO actually thinks nuclear war is winnable, okay? And we know for a fact that NATO does, in fact, believe that there are certain elements of the U.S. government in particular that believe nuclear war to be a winnable enterprise. And in fact, a lot of these things that you're seeing unfolding, the breakdown of nuclear treaties, these are things that were planned long before the Ukraine war. So the Ukraine war in and of itself is not something that is the cause of the breakdown of a lot of these treaties. It in fact is the result of the breakdown of many of these treaties. What treaties am I referring to? Well, let me just quickly rattle them off. These are all treaties that have not been ratified, or they're void, they've expired, or they're just defunct. Anti-ballistic missile treaty, intermediate range nuclear forces treaty, strategic arms reduction treaty, New START II, nuclear non-proliferation treaty, the conventional armed forces in Europe treaty, open skies treaty, outer space treaty, Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, Peaceful Nuclear Explosion Treaty, Nuclear Test Moratoriums, etc., etc. All of these treaties are essentially null and void or haven't been fully ratified, even though both sides have decided to honor them in an unofficial way, so to prevent, obviously, nuclear escalation. The problem is this, is that right now you have two approaches to nuclear strategy being executed by the East and the West, but we're going to focus on Russia versus primarily the United States and all of its vassals, i.e. NATO. These two approaches are as follows. Throughout the Cold War, you had something called nuclear deterrence, mutually assured destruction, which was such that both sides had a vested interest in putting all of their information out there, all their cards out there, in terms of this is what our capabilities are, and these are reasons why you should absolutely not attempt to do a first strike. The penultimate version of this was the dead hand system. And I say penultimate because we don't know what comes after that. We don't know if there's a modern version. The dead hand system was simple.
if the Russian chain of command was compromised in a first nuclear strike by NATO on Russian forces and the nation of Russia, then they would just launch all their nukes. So there was this completely disincentivized NATO from attempting to do a first strike, because even if they were able to somehow neutralize the chain of command and break up Russia into a bunch of little different pieces, all of Russia's nukes would fire. Okay, that was nuclear deterrence. And while the United States didn't have a dead hand, at least as far as we know, they had maybe sophisticated communication systems that would allow them to do something very similar. It was launch everything so you don't lose it all. Now, the strategy today is slightly different, because the Russians, in terms of their deterrence, in terms of their big boomer indiscriminate weaponry advantage, we're talking about the Sarmat 2, Satan 2 system. We're talking about the Avant-Garde, Skyfall, still hypothetical, still in prototype phase. Regardless, it's coming. So basically, it's a nuclear-powered nuclear missile. We're talking about the Poseidon, nuclear-powered nuclear torpedoes fired from the Belgorod nuclear submarine. We're talking about Kinzhal hypersonic weaponry. We're talking about S-550 missile defense and satellite destruction systems. These are all things that the Russians is putting out there for us to say, hey, okay, maybe we shouldn't mess with these guys, because we know that if we try to do a first strike, it's likely going to end badly for everybody. But the West, on the other hand, is incentivized to do something else right now. Right now, the strongest point of the West's nuclear triad, arguably, or at least the one that is more prominent than in the Russians' deck, is the aviational component. So in the nuclear triad, you have your submarines, you have your land-based missile silos, and then you have your air power. So the Russians, arguably, and even the Russia bros would likely admit that in terms of air superiority, NATO has not only a quantitative advantage, but they also have a significant qualitative advantage in terms of the advancements in their stealth technology. Now, some people say stealth technology isn't as significant as it might have been in days gone by. Regardless, NATO has a much bigger air force. The amount of planes that the United States has, before even considering the losses of Russia over the last 2 years, it was something like 3 to 4 times as many, you know, fourth and fifth generation fighter jets. So they have superiority there, and many of these aircraft have been designed for the purpose of fighting a nuclear war. And now we know, if you've been paying attention to the channel, I've been showing you video footage of F-35s for the first time ever landing in Finland. Finland is conducting nuclear exercises. Of course, right now NATO is completely surrounding Russia, okay? I mean, this vast border, I don't even know how long this border is, but it is thousands of kilometers from all the way from Ukraine all the way up to the Arctic. That is the landmass that Moscow must protect. And of course, this is part of the reason why we're seeing these drone strikes in Moscow, is because they're trying to keep their commercial space open. Ukraine is now trying to get it so that Moscow has to close its commercial airspace, which is the purpose of these attacks. Now, Moscow claims, according to RT, that they've been able to effectively intercept all of these drones. Oy. Imagine waking up to that every morning. Yikes. Anyways, that's a developing story. Let me just refresh the page and see if anything else has been discovered. At least 10 were shot down now. So I'm presuming, well, and this is what they're saying, okay? So on September 1st, it should be noted that 158 drones were shot down. Now, back to my fundamental point. NATO's strategy is not deterrence. NATO's strategy is all about first strike. NATO right now cannot defeat the Russians in a conventional conflict. They simply can't. They don't have the manpower. In fact, Russia can't defeat Europe, I mean, in a conventional conflict. Vladimir Putin has said as much. They don't have you need millions of troops. You need a huge amount of firepower. I mean, you look at the Gaza situation, you look at Bakhmut, you look at Azovstal, how much bombs and military equipment and personnel were lost just for those small campaigns. So imagine, you know, the vastness of Europe or Russia. It's just unimaginable. So NATO knows that it cannot defeat the Russians conventionally. The only chance it has, and the only way to explain their brazen nuclear brinkmanship, and this is what it is. This is textbook nuclear brinkmanship. While the Russians may advertise their nuclear weapons in an attempt to deter, what NATO's strategy is the complete opposite. They have every incentive to keep their technology secret. This is very important to understand. Two different strategies. One is deterrence. We put all our cards out there. We say, these are the reasons why you don't attack us. NATO's strategy at this point in time, if their strategy is for a first strike, which is what they are poised and positioned to do at this point in time. Okay, you have F-35s and B-2 bombers all throughout Europe, B-52s with the nuclear tip cruise missiles. You're going to be getting Tomahawk missiles back in Germany soon or sooner. They claim that they only have 100 nuclear gravity bombs in Europe, but those are only the ones that are in Europe's or the nuclear sharing program's possession. So we could be talking about hundreds of these potential gravity bombs, which of course you have to get pretty close because they are gravity bombs. However, when you have all of these stealth aircraft with this sophisticated technology where they're leveraging AI, they're going to leverage cyber warfare, they're going to use electromagnetic pulse, and most importantly, they're going to use sabotage. And all of these pinprick attacks that we are seeing right now, or can I find that here? All of these attacks that we're seeing on Moscow, these are all to try to suss out Russia's defenses. Because if you were going to do a nuclear strike, right now they're collecting data. NATO is collecting data, and I believe they are putting all of this data into an algorithm. They are leveraging artificial intelligence, not only on the tactical level, which is proven. Ukraine is using AI on the tactical level for target identification and helping them create optimal routes for their invasion. But it's also going to be leveraged on a strategic level. Right now, Ukraine is currently in Russia. Yes, in Russia. There was recently a video released that shows numerous different Ukrainians with firearms even and different pieces of paper, all broadcasting from various locations, as well as some pretty substantial government landmarks inside of Russia and showing the actual acts of sabotage, okay? So we know that they have a lot of sleeper cells within the country. So if you knew the day X that we're inexorably hurtling towards that inevitable end, then you would be attempting to collect as much data, move as much of your aviational component of your nuclear triad towards Russia, move as much of your navy towards Russia, which is what we're seeing in the Mediterranean, in the Red Sea, as an excuse to defend Israel. You're seeing a lot of American military power be agglomerated around that region. And so you have all of these aspects, and then, of course, of the space-based warfare component, there's the electronic warfare component, and you pull all these things together, and you start to realize that NATO very much has an incentive to keep their capabilities secret. Now, again, I have been one of the people who've said on this channel many times before that if the reason why there's some people who believe, oh yeah, the United States has all this secret technology. And I've been the first to claim that's stupid because the whole point of nuclear deterrence is that you want to show your hands so the guy is discouraged from trying to attack you. But what if you've given up on deterrence? And what if you're, I know the what if ninjas are going to come out in the comment section. I get it. That's fine because this is a stream of consciousness. If you just want to read the news, just go on Twitter or something. If you want fresh perspective, that's why you come here. If NATO NATO's only approach then, if it's not deterrence, is to conceal their capabilities. Now, Joe Biden, in a recently declassified document, was briefed, a document that apparently only existed on paper and there is no digital composite. This was so secretive that it was that classified. So there's only a few copies of this handed around. Essentially, according to one of the world's foremost nuclear experts on the topic, he claims that what was identified within this document was that there was going to be changes made to the nuclear guidance systems. And I'm drastically oversimplifying this. Okay, he gives hour-long presentations on this. If I can remember and I can find the link, I'll post it in the description below. But this is all open source intelligence, all confirmed. Essentially, what it allows the United States to do is drastically increase the precision and accuracy of their targeting capability, which effectively increases their nuclear arsenal without having to increase it. Because one of the reasons why you need so many nuclear weapons is because they're not nearly as accurate as a lot of people think. There could be a margin of error a few miles, and that could mean the difference between hitting a bunker and not hitting a bunker, hitting an airstrip and rendering it inoperable and not. Well, this advancement actually allows them to increase their targeting by almost double, according to him, which means that it reduces the failure rate to about 5% or something, whereas now it's still much better than that, despite all of the space-based enhancements that have been made to it and all of the technology that it's been evolved and upgraded into the Minuteman missile systems and I'm presuming the submarines as well. So NATO is incentivized to keep secret these technological advances in order, if their strategy is a first strike. If you are the aggressor, if you are the instigator, if you are the one that is going to launch that first strike, then you don't want Russia to know what all of your technology, the high point of your technology. You will still want to feign deterrence periodically and make moves to suggest that that is still the strategy that you're employing in order to reassure the Russians. But the problem is, as Ukraine starts to help NATO map out all of the weaknesses in Russia's defense systems, this puts Russia at extreme disadvantage. Russia, and I've been arguing about this with people for days, okay? There's going to be a lot of people who don't agree with this point of view. I'm not saying that it's going to work if they tried to do a decapitation strike on the Russian chain of command, but hear me out. It may be the case that they've leveraged artificial intelligence to reason with a high degree of probability that obviously they're not going to be able to hit every bunker, they're not going to be able to completely destroy the Russian military and the Air Force and all of their strategic forces and then, you know, the civilian infrastructure, they're not going to be able to do that. That's impossible, even with the amount of nukes that they have, considering, you know, a combination of Russian missile defense and just how distributed it all is. But maybe they have figured that in the same way that you can take out, right now in the United States, there's a little over 2,000 big transformers that effectively dictate the ebb and flow of the power grid, the three power grids in the United States. It has been determined, and you can go and look this up, that if you take out a dozen of those in the right places at the right times, then you can effectively render the entirety of the grid inoperable. Now, that might be slightly exaggerated, but if essentially what they're saying is that you don't need to bring down the whole network. You just need to bring down certain key nodes on the network, and that'll cause the whole system to collapse in a domino cascading effect. The same thing could potentially be true in terms of fighting a nuclear war, in terms of the Russian command and control structure. It could be that the United States is withholding these marginal technological advancements that would give them an edge when it comes to a nuclear strike. Again, Russia's primarily invested in these big projects, these big, what seem as they're offensive, but their primary purpose is defense. Okay, the reason why you make something like a Poseidon missile that can carry a 100 megaton warhead potentially, and six of them, in fact, on the Belgorod could carry six of these continent killers. Okay, the reason why you make something like that is not to use it, it's to discourage the other side from ever doing anything stupid. But if we presume maybe the Russian subs are being tracked, maybe the United States has nuclear weapons in space, maybe they're going to do a EMP, and they're going to let the Ukrainians continue to get their tentacles in there and feel it out, and they're going to activate all the sleeper cells at the same time. They're going to merc the subs all at the same time. They're going to get as many of the mobile platforms before they can get out of the bunkers, because, of course, the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans have most of their nuclear weapon systems on mobile platforms, which gives them a huge advantage over the shitty old Minuteman missile silos. And of course, Russia's missiles can carry multiple reentry vehicles, up to like 50, I think, with the Sarmat-2. 10 of those would be nuclear warheads that all can be independently targeted and be, I can't remember the actual amount, but a megaton each or just something insane, which of course would be nearly 100 times bigger than Hiroshima. So NATO could, all I'm saying, I'm not saying this is the case, but if we're seeing NATO straddle that line of nuclear brinkmanship with the Russians, we must presume that either they expect that the Russian stuff is just not going to work, or they have a plan to take it out, or they just are just stupid and they're just pushing and pushing and they don't think anything bad can ever happen. I'm not so convinced of that, because when you actually look at how they're positioning their forces around Europe, along the border with Russia, it really starts to look like they're getting ready to do a first strike. I mean, if you're the Russians right now and you're seeing Finland open itself up and doing nuclear exercises, you know, near the border with the United States, and you're seeing Lithuania announce today that it has an evacuation plan that it's working out in case World War III breaks out, and you're seeing all of these countries fortify their borders, only stopping short of putting mines on their borders, particularly the Baltic states. And when you see what's happening in Poland, and there's just so many points of escalation along this front. In the last week alone, Poland, Romania, and is it Latvia or Lithuania? I can't remember which one it was, but they all had Russian drones fall on their soil, okay? Now, remember, 2 years ago when that happened, it was big news. Everybody was like, oh, well, a couple people died at that time, and everybody thought Article 4 was going to be invoked at the time. Of course, it was not, thank God. That did not stop the nuclear escalation that we now know, that's now been declassified, that in late 2022, the CIA, according to William Burns, basically declassified that indeed Russia and the United States were very close to nuclear war. Now, if they were close then and they were only revealing this, I think they revealed that initially earlier this year, just imagine what's happening right now that they're not revealing to us. Why would we presume that, oh, now they're just being honest about everything? It would be absolutely asinine to suggest that. But if you're the Russians and you're seeing this buildup, you're seeing the Ukrainians target your nuclear radars, you're seeing them target your nuclear bombers, you're seeing them target Moscow's airport, and on and on and on. And now you have Olaf Scholz and Zelensky saying, oh yeah, we want to negotiate. Do you really think the Russians, I mean, for starters, that's all nonsense, because one of the preconditions is Russia has to leave the country. So again, we're right back where we started. And of course, at this point in time, I mean, the Russians would be incredibly naive to take Ukraine's word for it. In addition to that, you have an increasing stranglehold on the media ensuing. You probably heard, maybe you didn't, Candace Owens has now been put on the crap list in YouTube space. We have, the list is just getting longer and longer, from the Tates to the guy who owns Telegram, Tucker Carlson, the Ritters, You know, there's so many of these people who are just getting put on the shit list, on the blacklist. And that's all for a reason. It's because we are getting closer and closer, and they need to more tightly control the narrative. And there is going to be a resurgence. Throughout this October 7th stuff, attention has been more focused on shutting up people who are too overt in their criticisms of the Israeli government. And now, however, I'm starting to sense that they're starting to move back, because, you know, now there was a time when if you criticized Ukraine at all, you know, you would be demonetized, essentially, or maybe not demonetized, but you would just have this army of trolls come after you. But now NAFO, at least for the last couple years or so, NAFO has been waning in its influence. And now it's coming back, though, again, because I think that they're getting ready for shit to hit the fan. Aladinov, the Chechen commander, is indicating that Ukraine is getting ready to carry out another major offensive in the Kursk in an attempt to hold the nuclear power plant there hostage. Now, I mean, what's going on here, right? This is the same guy who was saying the war is going to be over by the end of the year. Now he's talking about in the next couple days, Ukraine is about to try to destroy or get close enough that they're in range of the Kursk nuclear power plant so they can create some sort of radiological incident and try to blackmail the Russians. Now, he seems pretty calm as a cucumber. This guy's seen all kinds of shit. There's all kinds of stories about his ability to remain stoic under pressure. So I would not take his seeming nonchalance about the issue as evidence that everything is fine. I would just take it as, you know, just look at the data. Okay, Ukraine is, again, advancing towards the Kursk nuclear power plant, despite the fact that they're saying it's a meat grinder, and you got these Russian operators who are in these bunkers flying these drones, laughing their ass off, saying that, yeah, we're just slaughtering them, you know, and they're not making any space whatsoever, and they're just having fun with it. But that's just one perspective, because we still don't know. Is this going to wind up like the failed, vaunted counteroffensive of 2022 or 2023? I can't even remember. I think it was 2023. It may. It very well may. But what we're seeing is the escalation level continue to ramp up. They are very, very desperate at this point in time. So something big is coming, and it's looking like, if you believe the polls, Kamala is starting to slip in the polls once again. And if that's the case, and if the Ukrainian project is so intimately tied with the Democratic campaign, then you're very likely to see some provocative measures taken in the coming days ahead. But I don't believe for a second that Trump strategically, in terms of the overarching meta foreign policy, is any different. We must understand that his withdrawal, and it's not really him, it's his advisors, it's the deep states, the interagency. They're the ones who are moving this whole thing in the direction that it's moving. But for sake of simplicity, we'll say Trump's getting out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty in 2019 was what started all this shit. I mean, 2014 is what started it with the Maidan coup and etc. But in terms of pushing it forward, the grand strategy is going to be the same. These politicians are going to pay lip service, and there's going to be this day-to-day trading going on. But the grand long investment strategy is World War III. Okay, this is what we are proceeding towards with reckless abandon, it would seem. So what you're seeing here is a NATO jet training to carry a U.S. nuclear gravity bomb. This is a NATO fighter from Germany, and this was spotted with a bomb trainer, not a real nuke, obviously. But this was during a flight on an Air Force base in California. Now, interestingly, California, there's been a lot of nuclear news coming out of California. They did that focus group where all these different branches of government came together to war game a nuclear strike on the city earlier in the year. And now we're seeing this training underway. And of course, they do a lot of the off the coast in the Pacific there. They do a lot of the Minuteman missile, nuclear missile tests in that region as well. So they're definitely going to be a key player when this shit goes down. So this is all to enhance NATO's nuclear sharing capability. So these dual capable aircraft capable of carrying nuclear and non-nuclear weapons can deliver American nukes in a conflict. NATO confirmed that the U.S. has deployed limited number of B-61 gravity bombs in Europe as an extended deterrence, which is often described as providing a nuclear umbrella. These nukes, which remained under U.S. custody and control, guaranteed the alliance's security. So they're claiming that only 100 of these B-61 nuclear gravity bombs, which have limited range, obviously, are going to be capable of fighting the Russians. To me, that doesn't add up. Clearly, this is just the nuclear sharing component of it, almost as if, what would you say, it is just an obligatory thing that they do, but the reality is the 1,600 nukes that are on duty right now in the U.S., I think it's 1,600, that's what's going to be doing the bulk of the work. So those could be anywhere, for all we know. Presuming that that they could be covertly placing them inside Europe, and Russia would be, why wouldn't they believe that we were doing something like that? Because if you believe that our leaders lie and that they are rapacious, they are greedy, and the military-industrial complex is insatiable, then you must also think that a lot of these things that they're telling us about the nature of the nuclear program and our nuclear strategy is also false, okay? So we must presume then that we are, in fact, preparing to engage the Russians in a nuclear war, and our only effective strategy would be a decapitation strike based on algorithmic calculations of all of this data that the Ukraine war is amassing for NATO. And this is putting Russia at an extreme disadvantage. And this is why Sergei Lavrov has been saying lately that the United States is not going to be able to sit this one out if it goes nuclear, trying to flex deterrence once again. But is deterrence going to work if increasingly, okay, and this was, understand that NATO planners, war planners, thought they could win a nuclear war before this Ukraine situation happened. There were people within the Pentagon that believed nuclear war was winnable before Russia's current rate of attrition. So imagine now, with the immense amounts of data, having two more NATO countries brought into the fray, critical ones at that, and just all of the advantages that have now been gained by having Ukraine fight this war against the Russia and smoke all of Russia's assets out of their holes and force them to maneuver around and identify where the missile defense is located, etc. So what I'm saying is the likelihood and the temptation that NATO would want to go this route increases every single day. The only thing that is going to stop it at this point in time is if Russia executes the Sergei Kareganov doctrine, which dictates we have to escalate to de-escalate in an attempt to drop a nuclear weapon in some controlled fashion, which is not going to lead to vertical escalation, if that's even possible, and that maybe that will get the West's attention. Maybe. Or maybe that's exactly what we are looking for. Again, if this goes down the way that I envision it, remember who they're going to blame the Russians for starting it. And this is, they're going to either, whether the Russians throw the first punch or not, they'll be able to say, well, we had intelligence that the Russians were going to nuke us, so we had to nuke them first. Simple. Simple as that. 90% of people will buy that shit. 10%, it won't matter because we'll be in a state of martial law, lockdown, dystopia by that point in time. And that's when all of the data, the servers, if they're still operable, because this is something that a lot of people don't think about, is that a primary target, I think, this day and age, would be the servers, would be all the data that's being collected on people, unless they wanted to leverage that in some way
But, you know, well, let's hope that they destroy all our data. If they can do us that favor, if we're going to go to a nuclear war, you might as well destroy all the data so the government doesn't know who's who. U.S. and South Korea are conducting nuclear exercises. This on the same day that Kim Jong-un said that they're going to grow their nuclear weapons program exponentially. Do you think that the nuclear clock, according to the Atomic Bulletin for Scientists, is going to increase or decrease? If it decreases, then we know that that thing is an entire crock of shit. Friend of the channel, Brian Keating, insists that it is a complete crock of shit. I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. I mean, do we really need that to know all of the reasons I've just mentioned? All the treaties, there's no more treaties, and we're in a hot war with the Russians. And right now, as we speak, the Russian airport's getting bombed. I think that's all we need to say. This is the closest we've ever been to nuclear war. So do yourself a favor. Stop watching these daily updates. Go and watch our Blue Strip content so you can actually learn how to ride it out. Because the day that it happens, it's too late. You're not going to be able to get lumber from the hardware store to build whatever you got to build. You're not going to be able to get replacement oil filters and lubricants and, you know, all these things that you're going to need around the homestead or wherever you are. Home food, you know, water, all of these things are going to be in limited supply. So just go and do it now, okay? Because things are getting really, really weird right now. The simulation involved officials from security, defense, military, diplomatic, and intelligence sectors of both countries essentially wargaming what a nuclear war would look like with North Korea. Right now, as I indicated, Kim Jong-un is increasing their stockpile of nuclear weapons, and the USA is considering putting intermediate-range weapons in Japan as well. The United States still has a sizable presence in the Pacific, despite claims that they have abandoned the Pacific for the Middle East. There's still a significant amount of firepower there and nuclear weapons, and we must presume that there's submarines there as well. Crimean Bridge was recently struck, according to Ukrainian bloggers. I'm not sure how true that was. Let's just check this developing story here. This is on RT, which is also banned. 10 UAVs. Okay, so it's still at 10. Again, I don't believe the Russians, what the Russians say, as much as I don't believe what the West says. Everybody's just bullshitting right now, which makes you wonder about history, doesn't it? Chinese People's Liberation Army incursions into Taiwanese airspace. You can see how many incursions there are in 2024. Okay, now take a look at this. This is when the supposed president was inaugurated. What, I can't remember, was it the president, or I think it was the president who was supposed to be not more pro-Chinese, but there was supposed to be some prospect for de-escalation. Anyways, that's what happened. Nearly doubled in terms of our incursions into the air defense identification zone. And right now, both sides are doing landed invasion exercises on their side of the strait. What's happening in the West Bank in Israel, these guys that I can't show for long because the video will probably be demonetized. I already showed them. I guess it doesn't matter. In the West Bank, Israel has been starting a new war. Jordan's getting pissed off. The war in Lebanon is still going to happen. It's just been postponed, and there's a lot of quiet on the northern front in Israel right now. I'm not really sure what to make of it, but pretty much all of the pundits in Israel are still rallying for a massive war to start with Hezbollah. They believe that the prospect of peace negotiations with Hamas is virtually zero. Sinwar is moving around whatever tunnels remain with about 20, how many, however many human shields, like 22 human shields. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing. So this is YouTube's message to Candace Owens. Due to violations of the YouTube partner program policies, including ad-friendly guidelines and community guidelines, Candace Owens' channel has been suspended from the YouTube partner program. And she was getting like easily a couple million views a day. Okay. And that is some serious Skrilla that she lost. But like Tucker, you know, she probably has a plan. She's got a lot of friends. She's well networked. But I mean, she's been pushing some buttons lately. She's been barking up some trees, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I don't know why this story is resurging again. Yeah, the Russians talking about space nukes. There's shit going on up there that we don't know, and I think SpaceX is definitely a part of that. I don't believe the whole Tony Stark persona, not for a second, not anymore. But I can tell you, Elon Musk, big time prepper. You can bet your ass about that. And I always watch the channel. So Elon, no hard feelings. It's just that, unfortunately, I think your best intentions will likely be exploited by the powers that be. Russia sets a new record in gold reserves. Remember Donald Trump today, he's saying that, well, we're going to put 100% tariffs on anybody who doesn't trade in dollars. I mean, how do people not think that's going to be confrontational to Russia? I mean, of course, it's going to be incredibly confrontational. So, you know, the price of gold is only going to continue to increase. That may have worked at one point in time. That may have worked during the Hulk Hogan era. You know how I talked about recently how it was a cool scene to see, you know, the Hulkster tear off his shirt. That was pretty freaking epic, you got to admit. However, where are all the new wrestlers? Where are all the new, you know, iconic wrestlers that should be doing that? This exceptionalism is a product of a past which no longer the circumstances are the same, in that the United States is not in a position anymore. There's BRICS now, which is still in its infancy, granted, but, you know, okay, so you bring up tariffs 100%. People are going to end up paying double then for various commodities, and you're talking about a consumer-based society. So, okay, this is going to incentivize domestic industrialization. You got 10 years. You know, there's going to be a lot of disgruntled people when they see the prices in Walmart skyrocketing because all of this shit is going up in price. Now, will China play ball? Will they continue to just deal with us solely in dollars? I'm sure they will to an extent for a while, but it will progressively get worse and worse. And this multipolar world will be tested in that respect. And that's why I say, at the end of the day, they're all on the same team. So, you know, Ukraine is allegedly preparing for a major invasion of Russia's Black Sea region. Now, this is from Russia Pravda, so it's a predominant, you know, it's a respected Russian media source. Take it with a grain of salt. Ukraine is readying 500,000 strong invasion army for spring. Sergei Lebedev, coordinator of the Mykolaiv Underground, said that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was preparing an invasion army to attack Russia's Black Sea region. 500,000. So how they would get there? Would they go from Odessa? Would they have to cross over from Kherson? Is this just fantasy? Who knows? If they're saying 2025, it probably means it's going to be like late 2037 or something. Lithuania is preparing a nationwide evacuation plan due to the threat from Russia. See if I have any more information on that particular story here. Not sure if I do or not. Oh yeah. Lithuania has barked so much that at Russia that it scared itself into preparing national mass evacuation plan by October, says Russian pundit and influencer. The fighting in Ukraine continues. The countries of our region are subjected to hybrid and disinformation attacks, and sabotage is a new reality. Coordinated actions with other Baltic countries in the EU are also needed for civil protection. Latvia and Estonia are working on strengthening civil defense by creating shelters and developing public warning systems, as well as evacuating their population from major urban centers if the Russians choose to invade. Interestingly, all of those Baltic states, their populations have nearly halved in the last 10, 15 years. So I don't know if it's just a flight from there into greater Europe for more opportunities. It's probably an issue of a lack of procreation as well, something that mires the West. And so they might just do the job for Putin himself if he can just hold on for another 10 years. Okay, I talked about all of the reasons why I believe NATO's plan differs from Russia's in terms of their nuclear strategy. I warn people about this. The U.S. House is moving to ban new DJI drones amid concerns about China. The House of Representatives voted on a bill to prevent new DJI drones from operating in the United States. DJI does make some of the best drones. They're not the most jailbroken or jailbreakable. I believe that a lot of them require you to have like a GPS signal, but there might be ways around it. But in terms of like lowest cost value, nothing beats like a DJI Mini. You can get those things for, in the States, I'm presuming less than $200, especially if you get like one that was maybe the Mavic Mini 2 or 3. I think they're still selling the 3. You know, there's been a few enhancements, but if you're just using it for recon and surveillance, all preppers at this point in time should have a drone. I mean, they're that cost effective that it's something worth getting, whether it's to survey property, you put it in your car. If there's ever a traffic jam in an emergency, you can, you know, send that thing up and you could see like how far traffic is backed up. And the minis are great because you can actually fly them without a license. So, and I don't think there's any real equivalent in terms of this scale, the size of it, under 250 grams with all the capabilities. So DJI is where it's at. So I would encourage you to pick one up. We are going to be becoming a drone dealer soon. But in the meantime, if you want to support the channel, I'll throw a link in the description section below. And yeah, if you want to get yourself a t-shirt, by all means, you can support the channel in that way. I don't do the 2-minute spiel ad at the beginning of every video. You know, we don't do any salacious advertising on the channel. So if you want to support us, CanadianPreparedness.com, local store, high quality products, trying to get you guys the best type of gear at the best possible prices. And a lot of people are trained to Amazon, but our prices in many respects are better than Amazon. I've been realizing not all, but some are. And because Amazon has trained everybody to go there now, they're employing a similar strategy that Walmart used to employ, where they would get you in by having these blockbuster deals. You know, right when you walked into the store, there'd be like a stellar deal on something like 99 cents for a television set. You know what I mean? And, you know, that would make people think, oh, everything's cheap here. But they actually found, and they've done studies to show, that lots of other things are more expensive there. So the net gain, it's the same, if not you're paying more for stuff. So I'm starting to see Amazon do that as well. And you're also seeing Amazon gouge a lot of their sellers. So this is causing a lot of people to not deal with Amazon and go back to, you know, independent dealers like myself. So because of course we carry inventory, we don't drop ship or anything like that. And we ship stuff directly from our warehouse to you. That's what's going on right now, folks. Please go and check out the videos that we released over the weekend. The 10 Commandments of Prepping was a video I released yesterday. And we also talked about water storage. Now, in the video, I show you a pool. And I should have said something in the video, but a lot of people were commenting on, well, why don't you just dig a pond? Believe me, I've been thinking about digging a pond before I even acquired the property. The problem with that is it's a massive undertaking, okay? It's a multi-year project. I don't own an excavator, and I don't have an entire season to commit to doing all the things that you have to do. And so that is ideal if you could just make a pond, you know, dig deep enough so that you can allow the water table to fill up a hole. Yeah, that's much easier. For the time being, especially I wanted to do something so that the average person who doesn't have an acreage, if you were like me for the last 40 years, you never had an acreage. So, but what can you do? Well, you can go down to Walmart or anywhere and just get one of these pools. And they range from a couple $100 all the way up to thousands of dollars. You put it in your backyard, you fill it up, the kids have something to do, you have something to do, and you know, you have a backup water supply just in case. Okay, so it's obviously only a 3-season solution. It's not something if you live in a place where it gets very cold. You know, it's not going to be a 4-season solution.
There's many other solutions that we have for water storage. Obviously, getting a well is the first thing, but we have a well, and it's a very high-powered well. The problem with a well is that, you know, it's not always going to be there either. You know, you might have a manual pump. You may have a backup well. Well, what if the pump breaks? You know, what if the electronic pump goes at some point? So you want a backup. So it's all about creating redundancy. And indeed, I agree with you guys 100%. You know, digging a hole in the ground and letting it fill up with the groundwater is a better solution in the long run. Unfortunately, we've also been dealing with a lot of drought in my region. So the water table has gone down significantly from where it used to be. And speaking of which, we've seen record temperatures again today, 34 degrees Celsius, which is approaching, you know, above 90 degrees, I think, in Fahrenheit. That is unheard of here. Well, not unheard of, but it's very rare for us to get it 3 days in a row. And of course, the wildfires are flaming up once again, and that heat wave is going to move across the continent. Now it's heading for the East Coast, so you guys are in store for some late summer warm temperatures. But I foresee that we're going to see some crazy wildfires breaking out again. Here's one final reassuring statistic for those of you who are in the precious metals market. Take a look at this. Housing is expensive. Home price to median U.S. household income ratio. A ratio the highest it's ever been in history, higher than the bubble, the housing bubble in 2008. Isn't that some scary shit? It's gonna get crazy, man. And remember that there's a record amount of people invested in the stock market right now, for lack of better option. Scary times ahead, my friends. Keep on prepping, keep on living and enjoying life. See you on the flip side.